Morning, everyone. Today's daf and Ksuvos daf test. We're back on Ches Amud Beis. We just a couple more brachas that we need to finish up. We'll finish up the brachas and then we'll start the new daf. On the bottom of Ches Amud Beis, if you remember, there was a tragedy. There was a death, and so Reish Lakish went together with the spokesman, and the two of them went to go pay a shiva call, and he instructed his spokesman to say some words of comfort. If you remember yesterday, the words that he extended were not exactly the most comforting of words. Talked about how, you know, when you misbehave, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes your children, your young children, and didn't exactly sound like they were ringing. They were flattering statements and statements that would actually assuage and comfort. But as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, he meant well. That's essentially what the Gemara says. We are at the basically halfway down the Amr, the first wide line, medium wide line on Ches Amud Beis, and more statements that were made by the spokesman of Reish Lakish. Remember yesterday, Reish Lakish basically pointed to his spokesman and said, "Okay, new you say something." So Amar Leis, he says to him, "Come in, my milsa kedeged shivcha shel Kadosh Baruch Hu." So I'd like you to say something in regards to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the shevacha, the praise of Kadosh Baruch Hu. So pasuk v'amar. So this is what the spokesman said: Hakel agadol barov gadlo, Kadosh Baruch Hu is great. Adir v'chazak barov na'oraos. Kadosh Baruch Hu is strong. Mechaye mesim b'mamara. Kadosh Baruch Hu will eventually resurrect the dead. Oseh gedolos adin cheker v'nefalos emin spar. Kadosh Baruch Hu has unlimited power. Baruch atah Hashem mechaye mesim. So okay, so he makes a brach of mechaye mesim. Okay, so Amar le kumei mamilsa keneged avelim. So he says, okay, no. So he turns to the spokesman. He says, again, I'd like you to say something regarding those who are actually sitting in mourning. Pasuk v'amar achin amyugim hamadukaim. So he says to him, those who are downtrodden. Be'evel azeh tenulav avchem lachkor et zos hi omeres la'ad. So this is always going to be the way. Nesiv hu misheshes yimei breishes. This is the path from the 6 days of creation. Rabim Shastu, Rabim Yishtu. I read this yesterday. Rabim Shastu, Rabim Yishtu. Kim Mishte Rishona Kach Mishte Achronim. So just like those that earlier drank from this, so to the latest one as well. Achenu Baal Nechamus Yenachem Eschem HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you comfort. Baruch Menachem Avelim. Okay, so he says a bracha regarding the Avelim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should provide them comfort. Amar Abaye, Rabim Shastu Lema, Rabim Yishtu Lema. So Abaye says, slow down. He says the idea that people drank from this, meaning it's happened in the past that people died previously. Fine, that's fine. But Yishtu, now you're going to mention how people will die in the future? That's not necessary right now. Lema Mishta Rishonim, Lema Mishta Achronim, Lo Lema. And again, the idea that this happened in the past, that's fine. But to mention how this is also going to happen in the future as well, again, it's true, but that doesn't mean that you should say it right now. So Damar Shimon Malakish V'chein Tanim Mishmei Rav Yossi Lolam Al Yiftach Piv LeSatan. Person shouldn't open his mouth up to Satan. Meaning, don't predict, don't prognosticate, don't talk about future events, especially if they're negative. Considering the fact that you do so, and there's a koach, there's a power in that which you say. I'm Rav Yossi. My crux is Damayinu La'amor Deminu. Beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu, the pasuk says that we were like Sodom, we were like Amora. So once you make that comparison, once you say those words, there's a koach, there's a power to those words. So Maya Hadolei Shimu Dvar Hashem Kitzinis Sodom. So the response by Yeshayahu was, as part of the Nevuah, Kitzinis Sodom. You're the leaders of Sodom. So it's you see that once those words come out of your mouth, so then those words take on a life to themselves. Okay. So one more thing I'd like you to say. This is again the spokesman of Reish Lakish. So he says as follows. The instruction was say something regarding the people who are paying a shiva call. Those who are gomel chesed. So pasuk v'amar achinu gomel chesedim. So he says, okay, you people are gomel chesed. That's it's a chesed. Right, Rambam writes this as part of under the category of Ahavta Recha Kamocha. One of the Ahavtas is to pay somebody shivakol. B'nei gom lechasadim amachzikim bebriso shel Avram Avinu. Eliciting the zchus avos of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, of course, was the model, the paradigm of chesed. We'll skip the parentheses. Achina balagmo yishalem lachem gemolchem. Kadosh Baruch Hu should be paying you for the kindness that you have done. Baruchatam shalem hagmo. Amalei kumayim amelsa kenega kol Yisrael. And finally, the spokesman says to, Reish Lakish says to the spokesman, I'd like you to say something vis-a-vis the entire Jewish people. Pasach v'am ribon olam padei v'atzel maleit hoshia amcha Yisrael. So he asks Kadosh Baruch Hu to please save all the Jewish people. Min ha-devra, min ha-cherev, min ha-bizo, min ha-shidafon, min ha-yirakom. From any catastrophe that falls. Mikol minei peraneos and mistrakshos of vasal olam. Terem nikra v'ata sa'aneh. And he says that just we call out to you, and even before we call out to you, Akash Baruch Hu, you should listen to us. Baruch Atah Otzer Magefa, Akash Baruch Hu, stopping the plague. Amru lav armila b'masisa tana. Okay. We're almost done. With yesterday's daf. Just one more point to go. As we discussed earlier in yesterday's daf, there's what's called the Suda Savra. When you come home from the basic first, from the basic chayim, so what you do is you sit down to a meal that you don't prepare yourself. Others prepare the meal for you. And it's what's called the Suda Savra. Havra from the word bari, which means it revives you, it sustains you. It's like I described yesterday, it's like emotional eating, but the good type. Meaning, and you're being comforted at the same time. So together in this meal, there was eating and there was drinking as well. And from the standpoint of Gemara, drinking means one thing. Drinking, not one thing, but generally drinking one thing, and that is wine. Asar kos tignu chacham in beis ha'aval. So there were 10 cups that were drunk in the beis ha'aval. Shlosh shekodem achila kedileftoch is b'nei me'av. So 3 cups before the meal, and that just gets you... what's your appetite? 3 cups during the meal, and that soaks the food. 4 cups after the meal. Okay, and the 4 cups correspond to the 4 brachas of benching. It's an interesting Rashi, I'll just quote it. I may be making too much of this Rashi, but Rashi writes, Echad keneged azan, a kol bracha, I think it's a simple pshat in Rashi, and that is the way Rashi, the way it sounds like from Rashi. If with every bracha of benching you finish, in other words, there are 4 brachas in benching altogether, right? The 4th is midrabbanan, but there are 4 brachas in benching. So you'd say a bracha, and after every bracha, you would then you'd make a bar priya gafen. I don't know about that, but in other words, you would drink a cup with the conclusion of every bracha. It's a strange Rashi. That's normally not how benching works. Benching, you go from start to finish, and then afterwards you drink a cup. So in the Beis Aval, you're drinking after every bracha. Okay, it's an interesting Rashi. But anyway, keneged atov emetiv osif alem arba echad keneged. I'm sorry. And another 4 cups were added. So for those of you who are keeping score, so now we are up to cups 11 through 14.
Is that just for the mourners?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know. So the it's an excellent observation. I agree. Arba, I'm sorry. And then Hosif Ole Marba. So now another 4. Echa keneged Chazan Ha'ir. So those for the Chazan Ha'ir. Who are the Chazan Ha'ir? Remember Chazan, every time the Gemara mentions Chazan, it's not referring to the cantor, it's referring to basically the Gabbai. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes regarding the Chazanei Ha'ir. Tiknolam bracha alav lefisha yushim sham she'ir lisasek b'meisim avishar tzarchit zibor. The Gabbaim of the city. And Gabbai over here doesn't mean Gabbai in terms of the shul, just meaning the person who oversees, who takes care of things. So he goes through the trouble of being a public servant. Being a public servant, you usually don't get much thank yous, and you rarely do you get a bracha. Okay, great. Great opportunity to give the guy a bracha at the time when you came home from the funeral, and the Gabbai probably took care of the mace. V'echad keneged parnasei ha'ir. The parnasei ha'ir, those were the wealthier people who sponsored and donated, and okay, give a bracha to them as well. Echad keneged beis hamikdash, v'echad keneged Rabban Gamliel. And one for the beis hamikdash, and one for Rabban Gamliel. Beis hamikdash, what? So Rashi explains why for the Beis Hamikdash. Rashi says, "Tiknu la birchas nechumim sheyinachmu amakum mevinyano me'evalenu shenu metablam alav ka'alameis." It's a beautiful idea. It's obviously a depressing idea, but as long as we're in mourning and we lost a loved one, so let's think about what else we're mourning over. We're mourning over the Beis Hamikdash. So the third additional bracha that we say after benching is going to be over the Beis HaMikdash. And finally, a fourth one for Rabban Gamliel. Okay. That one I'm going to hold off on explaining because the Gemara is going to explain in just a moment. Now, we are now at 14 cups of wine. So the Gemara points out, which probably everyone here in this room already considered, and that is at the end of that, you're going to be drunk. So, the Gemara says they scale back. They went back to what seems to be 10. Okay, okay, I understand. There is a threshold for sure, and not everyone's the same, but the Gemara assumes that by 10, so 10 is comforting, 10 is not intoxicating, 14 already is intoxicating. My Rabbi Gamliel, so the Gemara now just wonders, what exactly is it that Rabbi Gamliel, we're having a special bracha for Rabbi Gamliel, the Gemara says, the Tanya, but you're sure not, it's also a lekrovav, yosem mimisaso. The Gemara points out that Rabbi Gamliel made a great institution because it used to be, once upon a time, that burying a loved one was cost prohibitive. And the Gemara describes, the Gemara speaks in very strong terms, the Gemara says it was actually worse than the death itself. And so the amount of money that was necessary to bury, what did people do? So the Gemara describes tragically that after the death, they couldn't afford burial. So what did they do? So they left the body and they ran away and they just couldn't afford it. So Rabbi Gamliel v'nag kalos batzmo. So Rabbi Gamliel said, okay, this is already getting out of hand. So he made the following institution. And he used himself as a model. He says, v'otzil b'kli pishtan. He says that when I die, so the way you're going to bury me is in simple linen clothing. And you're not going to spend a lot of money in a suit and a tie. And in other words, simple linen clothing. So v'nagu kolam achrav v'otzil b'kli pishtan. And so from that point going forward, so how do people get buried? In simple linen clothing, what we would call tachrichin. And that was instituted by Rabbi Gamliel because he saw that the cost of death was skyrocketing. Amrav Papa v'ayina na'agama afila b'tzrada barzuza. And Rav Papa points out that nowadays the minhag is to get buried in very cheap clothing, right? Rashi describes it as canvas clothing. It's worth but only one dinar. You know, whatever that results in, whatever that that translates into. But the idea is again, it's very cheap clothing, and again, the idea is to keep the cost of burial down, and so that everyone can afford burial. No, the Gemara over here is referring to the basic cost of burial. It was just exorbitant. And so they would leave it for somebody else to do because they couldn't do it. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of yesterday's daf. We are now beginning today's daf. Daf Tes in Ksuvos. I'm going to say it one more time, but it's true. It's a classic daf. It really touches on some of the most basic issues regarding Ne'emanus, credibility, Sfeik Sfeika. That's a big topic in today's daf. We'll talk about Rove. We'll talk about Dovin and Batsheva. We'll talk about the practice of going to warfare and writing a get before going out to warfare. A lot of big topics coming up. It's one of those dapim where you could spend a tremendous amount of time. In fact, in yeshivas, they do. Right? The first parak of Ksuvos, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but the first parak of Ksuvos is super popular in yeshivas. Meaning that in yeshivas, when they learn Ksuvos, they either learn the first or the third parak. Okay, when we get to the third parak, you'll see some major topics discussed in the third parak as well. Just basic, fundamental topics. First parak as well, today's daf is one of those examples of just some of the most basic topics. So, if you ask anyone in what they're learning in yeshiva, they say they're learning ksuva, so the safe assumption is either they're learning the first or the third parak of the Masechta. When my years in YU, I learned the third parak, right? It's going back a while. But yes, I learned the third parak of the Masechta. Back in yeshiva. I'm a Rebbe Lazar. We are starting now today's daf. So Rebbe Lazar says as follows. So, after the first night of relations with his new wife, so he goes to court the next day and he makes what seems to be a statement which is a little bit chutzpahdik, and he says Pesach Matzuch Matzasi, which means that he encountered no resistance. He had relations with his new wife and he encountered no resistance, and he's now claiming that his wife is not a besula based on his own experience. And Ne'eman La'osar Alav. And the Gemara says, he has ne'emanus, he has credibility. He is believed now and she will become prohibited. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi on the top of the Amud goes on to describe. First of all, where's the dam? Meaning, we are now having a discussion about whether his wife is a basula or not a basula. So, if she was a basula, so doesn't that mean that there would have been blood? I'll answer my own question. Yes, it would mean that there would be blood. So, why is it, where's the blood right now? So, Rashi over here is bothered by this question. If you take a look at the top Rashi in the Amud, Rashi writes, V'tainas damim ain lo. Right now, blood is not going to be an issue. Kigon, shimei mishpachas dorketi shein lahem dam besulim kedilakamon. By the way, let me just clarify my point that I explain the Rashi. It's not where's the blood, but where's not the blood. Meaning, he's making a claim that she wasn't a besulim. Okay, so the best evidence would be to bring in the bed sheet, or as we learned a couple of days ago, there's also what's called shushpanim. In other words, there are wipes that he and she used after the first bia, and that would be evidence that she was or she was not a basula. So in other words, there is physical evidence that's brought into the court, and that would be the bed sheet. So why isn't the bed sheet being brought in? That's the issue that Rashi's dealing with. Why right now is the only thing that's on the table for discussion is his own personal experience and his assertion of Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, that I found no resistance. Where's right now the physical evidence? That's what Rashi is dealing with. So now that I felt like I properly prepared us for Rashi, so let's take a look at Rashi inside. The Tanya's Dame Me'en Lo Kigon, Shimei Mishpachas Dorketi, Shein Lam Dam Besulim Kedil Hakamon. So as we're going to learn in tomorrow's daf, there are families that don't have Dam Besulim. Okay, there's a genetic mutation, and certain families just simply don't have Dam Besulim, so therefore for them, there is no such evidence. Neither supporting her claim of being a Besula, or not supporting her claim of being a Besula. That's one possibility. Or Rashi says very simply, Oshenevda mimenu mapa velo yada im hayadam im lav. Or let's say they couldn't find the bed sheet. Let's say the first night of intimacy was at a hotel, and then before they turned around, right? The bed was stripped and sent to the laundry. Okay, so in other words, it just they don't have it. So velo yadem hayadam im lav. Aval zos brura lo. But Rashi points out, but one thing he's sure about, which is shepesach pasuch matzah, and that is that he feels from his own experience that there was no resistance. We're going to learn tomorrow in tomorrow's daf, but we'll just make the point now because it's going to be a pretty obvious point, and that is that he can only make that assertion if he's had past experience. If he's had no past experience, he has absolutely nothing to compare with. So then that claim just simply has no basis and no credibility. But we'll see that in tomorrow's daf. Neman lo osar alav. Let's take a look at this next Rashi. This next Rashi is critical. He's believed. He's believed, meaning right now all he has is his own assertion and his own experience. Rashi writes, Ve'alfa pishena davar zeh yachol hit barer ela alpiv. So now what are we doing? We're creating a fact on the ground based on something that he and only he can attest to. So Rashi writes, okay, an important point, which again will be clear in the Gemara, but let's say it right now. He's believed, but only vis-a-vis him. He's not believed as saying a fact that is just simply going to now be an unequivocal fact. What he's saying is that from his perspective, she's not a basula. Vis-a-vis him, he's going to be believed. But in other words, she doesn't have to believe him, and you'll see what I mean in just a moment. Meaning, he can be believed in terms of now that he's firmly of the belief that she was not a basula, and he was expecting her to be a basula. So now from his standpoint, he can now separate from her. He can divorce her. But Rashi points out, she's not going to lose her ksuva. Meaning, it's not an objective fact that she is not a basula. It's a subjective fact. So if it's subjective, it's only going to be subject to his viewpoint. From his viewpoint, she's not a basula. From her viewpoint, she's going to argue. And she's going to say, no, I am, or I was. And she...
Why don't we say we believe him, or we don't believe her?
So what we're saying is both. What we're saying is that both are correct. We believe him and we believe her. But when we believe him, it means subjectively we believe him. From his perspective, he's believed. So in other words, he wants to now leave the marriage because she was not a basula. Fine. But...
He has to.
Right. Well, we're going to clarify that point. But yes, with a clarification, I'm going to agree with you. But we'll see the clarification in just a moment. From her perspective... No, she says I was a basula, she's believed. She's not going to forfeit her ksuva, she's going to get her ksuva. From his standpoint, he's believed. From her standpoint, she's believed, even though obviously they're not in agreement with one another. Gemara goes on to explain. Back to the Gemara. Gemara says, I'm a little bit confused in terms of the conclusion. the fact that he's believed for himself, right? The principle, Shavi Nashechaticha Disora, you want to make something prohibited to you, by all means, you have every right to do so. But the Gemara says, but when all said and done, what is he saying? He's saying that she wasn't the Basula. Okay. But a number of things could have happened in terms of arriving at that point of her not being a Basula. The Gemara, what the Gemara describes as fake Sfeikahu, it's a double suffix. Number one, suffix Tachtav, suffix Ein Tachtav. Let's say he's right. Let's say she wasn't a Basula. So first of all, it could be that she had relations before they were married. Remember, they are at the second stage of marriage, which means that they were a year mikudeshes to one another. Fine. But that's a year being mikudeshes. That means that her entire lifetime earlier, she was a single woman. Now, obviously, it's totally inappropriate for her to have relations with another man, but that doesn't make her prohibited to her husband by her having relations with another man prior to the Kiddushin. So, number one, now that we're all he's saying is that she wasn't a Basula, but it could very well be that she had the relations prior to the Kiddushin. That's point number one. And the Gemara says, and even if she did have relations while during the stage of Kiddushin, it could also very well be that she was raped, and that wasn't a consensual act of relations, and if she was raped, she's not going to be prohibited to her husband. So this is what's called in halacha, sfeik sfeika. The Gemara actually uses the term. Over here, sfeik sfeika, it's a double down. And what do we generally say by sfeik sfeika? Sfeik sfeika would be mutter, or in this case, muteres, meaning we have now a double doubt. Even if he's right, even if she wasn't a Basula, but A, could be that the relation she had was before Kiddushin, and B, even if it was after Kiddushin, could have been Ba'ones. Now there is, I'm just going to throw out numbers, a 25% chance that, let's say, she will become prohibited to him. Again, you understand, all I'm doing is just taking 50% and then knocking it down another 50%. I don't really mean that statistically. Just saying, it's a very small chance that she will be prohibited to him. So if that's true, so then the conclusion should not be prohibition. It's a sfeik sfeika.
No, because it doesn't impact on this statement that Shavila Chaticha Disura doesn't.
Right.
Well, you know, doesn't. He's still saying, well, how does that change that?
Because even in his, I think I do understand your point, meaning he doesn't care about the statistics.
He's saying it's also. So once right. He says, this is great for, you right. Can eat it, that's it. I don't care what it is, fake, the way it is.
Okay, good.
The fact has nothing to do with it.
Right, but even, I understand your point, even in his own claim, even if he wants to just simply say she's also to me because I'm in the mood today for to make her also to me. In other words, that's the idea of Shavi Nafsheh Chaticha Disura. But I think what bothers the Gemara over here is that his claim is that she's aser aliba da hilchasa, meaning from a halachic standpoint she's aser. And to which the Gemara is saying, but that's not true. Halachically she's not aser. Halachically it's a sfeik sfeika. So the Gemara says, lo tzricha beishes kohen v'ibaisem beishes yisrael kegon degabe ba'avur kedusha p'chusa mi'ibas gimoshanem v'yamechad. So the Gemara says there are two circumstances that the Gemara says we could think of in which it's not a sfeik sfeika, it's one suffix. Number one, let's say, for example, it's a Eishes Kohen. Okay, the husband's a Kohen. So now, what does that do? That eliminates the Ones Ratzon variable. Because unfortunately, the halacha is, the halacha is not unfortunate, but it's the reality of the halacha. The halacha is that Eishes Kohen is going to be prohibited to her husband, doesn't matter if it's Ones or it's Ratzon, whether she was a willing or not willing participant in the extramarital relations. So therefore, by the Eishes Kohen, that removes one of the sfeikos, and so therefore the Or is only one suffix, which is tachtav or eino tachtav, during Kiddushin or prior to Kiddushin.
It should be the zona then.
No? And then, so exactly the point. It's a suffix zona, and therefore the also. So that's one example. A second example, says the Gemara, is let's say that he was mekabel Kiddushin from her prior to her turning 3 years of age. Obviously that's very young. More than very young, but the idea is that we know that a woman can be mekabel kedushin. I'm sorry, a father can be mekabel kedushin for his daughter at a very early age, even before she turns the age of three. And the case over here is such where he was mekabel kedushin. So now, what does that do? That eliminates the suffix of tachtav or eino tachtav, meaning there was only one stage of her life, and that is tachtav. Now, it's true, Rashi points out, it's true she could have had Bia prior to that point in time, But Rashi quotes the Gemara Nida, and the Gemara Nida says that at that point in time, that does not damage her Basulim. Her Basulim, the Gemara's Nida quote is it's Choser. It comes back. Anyway, the point is that we know that there's only one state of her being, and that's Tachtav. And then the only suffix is either Ones or Ratzon. Okay, so those are two different circumstances in which it'd be reduced down to one suffix, and it's not a double suffix. So my kamash malam, when all said and done, the Gemara says, so what do we just got done saying? What we have just got done saying is that if the husband decides that his wife is not a bestula based on his own personal experience, and there is no objective facts other than just his own subjective viewpoint, and he wants to say now that she's prohibited to him, so she's prohibited to him. That's really what we're saying. The Gemara says, but we knew that. And not only do we know that, meaning all this is coming to us from a statement to Rabbi Elazar, who's an Amora. The Gemara says, I have a Mishnah, my Kamashmal and Tanina. Mishnah Kedushin, Omer Lisha Kidash Tich. So here's a he said, she said. A fascinating he said, she said. He says to her, you know, we're married. You know, I was Mekadosh you, and as Rashi points out over here, I was Mekadosh you with witnesses. Meaning Mazel Tov. And Vihi Omeris Lo Kidashtani. And her response is, look, sir, I don't know who you are. I don't have to be that, you know, that dramatic. I don't have to paint that much of a caricature. She says, look, nice guy, but it never happened. I don't know what you're talking about.
Where are the witnesses?
So he claims, Rashi is bothered by your question. Rashi says that his claim is there were witnesses. I just can't find them right now. I'm telling you, that was it was a great kiddushin. Okay, you even described what he served at the meal. Whatever.
So this is for Erush, is it not?
This is for kiddushin. Yeah.
What are their names?
He even tells us who their names are. They're just not around right now. I can't find them. Okay, again, the point being is that based on his own assertion, from his perspective, they were married. Now, again, from her perspective, they weren't married. But again, that's not the point. The point is that from his own subjective statement that he said, so you want to say that they were married? Good. We're going to believe you from your perspective. That's exactly the Mishnah's point. The Mishnah goes on to say, just 1 second. So for example, now let's say he wants to marry her mother, her daughter, her sister. He can't. Because from his perspective, there was kedushin. Even if he gives her a get. Now again, from her perspective, I don't know what you're doing now. You're giving me a get? We were never married. But even if he gives her a get, and after giving her a get, he says, okay, now I'm interested in your sister. Okay, I'm not sure if I'd recommend the shidduch. He doesn't sound like, you know, he knows what's going on. But the point is that from his perspective, he's believed. And from his perspective, they were married. And since they were married, so all of her relatives will be arayos to him. Now, from her perspective, they weren't married. She's totally dismissing this claim. And again, the claim is only based on his own subjective standpoint. He's got no facts. He's got no witnesses. He's got nothing supporting it. And she's saying it never happened. She's believed. And what does that mean? That means that if she's interested in his brother, she can marry his brother. That's not a problem. So, what do you see? From a Mishnah, you see this already. That if a person wants to make a claim, and based on his claim, prohibits something to himself, he has every right to do so. So now, when all said and done, now we go back to our case, where the man makes a claim the next morning. He says, Pesach Pasuch Matzasi, I found no resistance, and I think she wasn't a virgin. Look, you can make the claim. You want to make the claim, you certainly can. You want to make her prohibited to you, you certainly can. You have every right to do so, as the Mishnah Kedushin already pointed out. So the Gemara's question is very simple. What's Rabbi Elazar introducing us to that we didn't already know from a Mishnah? Ma'od Detem, the Gemara says, I'll tell you the Chiddush. Hasam Devadi Kimlei Ava Hacha Mekim Hudalo Kimlei Kamash Malan. Chiddush is very simple. When he makes the claim, that Mishnah Kedushin, and the claim is, I betrothed you. Okay, from his perspective, he's right. I'm not saying he's factually right. I'm just saying he knows. At least he thinks he knows. In other words, there were witnesses. There was the ring. He was Mekadosher. His claim is, from his perspective, perfectly legitimate. Again, legitimacy meaning not objectively. from his standpoint, he's got all the facts down on the ground. Over here, even he's not totally sure. In other words, what is he saying? He's saying he didn't find resistance. Okay, but now that's not an objective standpoint. That's not something which you know. Something which you think. I might have thought, says the Gemara, the Ma'u de Tema, I might have thought that even in this case over here, you can't really go forward with that claim, even from a subjective nature. I'm not going to say that she's us or to him based on that claim. Kamashmal on the that's the chiddush. Chiddush is that even here, or even the claim of Pesach Pesuach, we're going to believe him from his perspective. The Gemara is bothered now by another statement to Rebbe Elazar. Now, the way the Gemara is going to first introduce us to this next statement to Rebbe Elazar, it's a very cryptic statement and also totally unclear. What I'll do is we're going to just go along with the Gemara. It will take the Gemara just a little bit of time, not that long. It'll take to the bottom of the Amud to fully clarify the statement to Rebbe Elazar. But once we have the statement fully clarified, then we'll see that it really wasn't much of a question to begin with. But right now, let's just see the Gemara's, again, I'm going to revisit the statement once again, a Rebbe Elazar, and the Gemara's at this point in time going to think it's a problem. Again, so... How does a woman become prohibited to her husband? You know how a woman becomes prohibited to her husband? Warning, seclusion, what we would call sota, right? Which it is sota, meaning her husband says to his wife, I don't want you to be with that man. He warns her, and he warns in front of two witnesses, and then she goes and she secludes herself with that man. Okay, remember the first mission of sota. Let's just assume that you need two witnesses for that as well, although that's subject to a machlokas. So she becomes now prohibited to her husband. That is, says Rebbe Elazar, the only way that a woman becomes prohibited to her husband. Already you know that statement in of itself, that's not true. A woman can become prohibited to her husband in other ways. Notably, let's say two witnesses saw her commit adultery. Okay, and in just a moment, the Gemara is going to point that out. But right now, let's just with the short statement to Rebbe Elazar, let's work with what we have. And Ucha Maisa Shahaya, and he says, and do you know where you find this? By Dovin and Batsheva. Dovin and Batsheva. To which the Gemara says, what are you talking about? V'tizbra Maisa Shahaya Bekinu V'stir Hava. Dovin and Batsheva. There was no warning. Uriah never said to his wife, "Hey, I don't want you to be with Dovin." We never see that in Tanakh. And what is he talking about? The Od Miyasura. And furthermore, Bathsheba wasn't prohibited to David. Okay, we're going to discuss in just a moment the incident and what happened. But we all know the conclusion. Bathsheba was muteris to David. So what are we even talking about? So halokasha hachikama. So the Gemara says, you're right. The statement as reported by Rebbe Elazar obviously is not explainable as it stands. It's not tenable. So what we're going to do is we're going to clarify. Not kim maisa shahaya, but mi maisa shahaya. We're not making a comparison. We're making a contrast. Since you see that Bathsheba was not prohibited to David, therefore you see that the only way that a woman becomes prohibited to her husband is only through kinu istira. The lo have kinu istira velo itzira. So David and Bathsheba, there was no kinu, there was no istira, and therefore there was no prohibition. So that means that the only way that there's a prohibition is through kinu istira. The Gemara says mikoma kom kasha kinu istira in Pesach Pasuach lo. Now the Gemara formulates a question. What do you see? How does a woman become prohibited to her husband? Only through kinu istira. But not Pesach Pasuach, not if he makes a claim and he says that there was no resistance, that's not enough to create Isser. So the Gemara says, look, at this point in time, it's not such a great question. Kino Isteri in Edim Lo? Because do you really think Rebbe Elazar meant that the only way that a woman becomes prohibited to her husband is through Kino Isteri? Gemara says that's not true. Two witnesses come and say, they saw this woman have relations with another man, she's prohibited to her husband. Amen. There doesn't have to be warning, there doesn't have to be seclusion. If they saw the act of Bia, she's prohibited to her husband. So you can't take the statement to Rebbe Elazar super literally. Ela hachikamer. So now finally the Gemara is going to say we're going to have full clarification of what Rebbe Elazar meant. Eina ish nesersa abala be'ed echad ela b'shnei edim. Okay, so We'll start like this. How does a woman become prohibited to her husband? So starting point for the discussion is two witnesses. You need, right? You need two witnesses to substantiate something. This is obviously a davar she'be'erva. You need two witnesses to substantiate. In other words, you need two witnesses. Fine. And then v'kinu is tirafila be'ed echad. Now, if there was a warning and there was seclusion, so we have a chiddush akra. The Torah invokes the chiddush that because there was a warning and because there was seclusion, now in terms of establishing that she committed adultery, all you need now is one witness to see the act of bia. Now, let me try to be clear about this point. If there was a warning and there was seclusion, and again, both of them were done in front of witnesses, she becomes prohibited to her husband. But we're not calling her an adulteress. We don't know. All we know is there's a lot of suspicious activity. And we also know that if the husband wants to be together back together with his wife, they have to go to the Beis HaMikdash and they have to drink the Mesota. But what we're saying right now is that if there was Kino and there was Tira, and there was but only one witness who saw the act of relations between she and that man in that room, she is now prohibited as an adulteress to her husband. Okay, it's a chiddush. Rashi goes through how we know this chiddush, but anyway, let's for now, it's a chiddush, and that's a chiddush akra. I would say the only time in the Torah that one witness is believed. Now, I know we're right on the heels of finishing Masechet Yevamos, and we've gone through the 10th, 15th, 16th prakim of Yevamos, where we know that there's another area in Halacha where we believe one witness. Mm-hmm. But there, it's a little trickier there. Isha Daiko Mintzava, the woman is herself expected to do some investigative work. This is the only time in the Torah where one witness is believed, where there was Kinu and there was Tira. And then, continuing now in our Gemara, Upesach Pasuach, Kishnei Edim Dami. Now the statement of Pesach Pasuach, that is like two witnesses. Meaning his claim of, I found a resistance, so when I had relations with her and it didn't seem to me that she was a Basula and I really feel she was a Ba'ula. So he's believed it's like two witnesses. Now, V'chitema Maisa Shahaya Mibnei Mala Asrua. Now, why is it, if all this is so why isn't Batsheva prohibited to David HaMelech? Now, let's pause at this point in the Gemara and let's try to understand this question a little bit better. Meaning, we have the full statement of Rabbi Elazar with all of its clarification. The clarification is, two witnesses make her asur to him. After Kinu and Stira, one witness makes her asur to him. If he says Pesach Pesuach, she too will be asur to him. Okay, that's all included in the original statement of Rabbi Elazar. And then, after stating all that, then the Gemara has a question, so why is Bat Sheva now permitted to David HaMelech? Wait a second. And really those two questions are connected one to another.
No, meaning, I think in this case it's talking about her husband, because look at the answer.
Huh? Well, it happens to be,
answer,
I mean,
from the answer, it sounds,
I understand that, but I'm looking at Rashi right now, and it happens to be that it's the Rashi says that it's talking about David. Look at that last Rashi on the Amud, which I'm about to quote in just a second. Why is the Gemara now bothered by the idea that David and Bathsheba are permitted to one another, or prohibited to one another? Meaning, what did we just say? How does a woman become prohibited to her husband? Either two witnesses, either one witness after Kinu Istira, or either a claim of Pesach Pasuch Matzasi. Those are your options. By David, Bathsheba, and Uriah, you have none of the above. Meaning, there weren't two witnesses. There wasn't Kino Istira. There wasn't Pesach Pasuch. Why is the Gemara even bothered by this? Why is this even a question? See, take a look at the bottom Rashi. Mimnei Malo Asua Al David Sharei Edim Harbe Yadu. A fascinating Rashi. Rashi says, do you know what there was? There were witnesses who knew.
Everybody.
Right. Rashi says everybody knew. Now that's interesting. Meaning, when again, we're just, all we have now is our legal hat on right now, which is generally what we have on when we're learning Gemara. Our legal hat on right now. Everybody knew. Okay, the rumors, the gossiping. That's all. That's just lovely. But in other words, we're talking about creating an isser. Creating an isser, you need witnesses to see the actual act itself, or you need one witness to see the act after Kinu Istira, or you need the husband to assert Pesach Pasuch Matzasi. meaning you need facts on the ground, either objective or, in the case of Pesach Ben Seruch, subjective. But over here, the idea that everybody knew, therefore she's prohibited, what does that mean, everybody knew? Nobody saw. The bottom Tosfos is bothered by this Rashi. Right. The Einira, Tosfos says, I don't understand Rashi's point. It's true, a lot of people knew that David took Bathsheba into his house, but Amaylo Asur la David, I'm sorry, Mikamakom lo ra'u kimchoch bishfalferes, shebifnei b'nei adam lo shimesh, but still, in order to make a woman an adulterous woman, you have to see the act of Bia. Nobody saw the act of Bia. They didn't do that publicly, they did that privately. And Tosfos gives his own shot in the Gemara, but it's very interesting, this give and take between Rashi and Tosfos in terms of what's even the question of the Gemara, where the Gemara makes the assertion, well, Bathsheba should be also to David because adultery. Who, where are the witnesses? Who saw it? Okay.
These are witnesses to Shishin herself.
But that's, so, I, you're right, but that's not...
One of the three things is... It says seclusion is with two people.
Seclusion with two witnesses, with two people.
Warning and seclusion.
And eid echad that sees a bia. Yeah. Right. Kinu v'stira and eid echad. Okay. The kinu and stira. I tried to make this point clear earlier. The kinu and stira would make her prohibited to her husband, but not because she's an adulteress. Uh-huh. It's because she's because now it's an unknown, uh-huh. And now you have to go to the base of Mikdash. But in other words, to call her an adulterous woman, you need it. You need witnesses. You don't have it over here. Rashi over here gives a pshat, a very interesting pshat. Well, everyone knows he took her into the house. Okay, but that, as Tosfos points out, that's interesting, but that's not enough. To make her to label her a sota, an adulterous woman. Okay. Anyway, back to our Gemara. So the Gemara now wants to know. What?
No.
Actually, I'll tell you the truth, Martin. As long as you brought it up, Tosfos says something very similar to what you're saying. Tosfos points out that the correct shot in the Gemara at this point is that David himself knew, meaning you're right. The world itself did or did not know, and the circumstantial evidence certainly leads us to the conclusion that they had relations. But when all said and done, David knew. David knew that she committed adultery. Right, that's, let's take a look at that last line of Tosfos. David yodeh bevade shenevala, ve'afa v'isha asa tshuva, mikam akom ikva, v'im haisa asura lo lo hayo so tzadik, lo chala l'isha. So, from David's standpoint, he knew that she was a married woman. So how did he keep her afterwards? That's, Tosfos says, that's the pshat in the Gemara. Okay, similar to your point. So the Gemara is going to give two very interesting answers in terms of why wasn't Bathsheba prohibited to David HaMelech? Again, let's set the question up, and we're going to give two answers. The question is, at the time when David had relations with Bathsheba, she was a married woman. She was married to Uriah. If so, we have a principle of once a woman commits adultery, Asur LaBaal, she's prohibited to the husband. The Asur LaBoa, and she's also prohibited to the paramour. She's prohibited to both. So how can David then maintain a marriage with her afterwards? And I'm sure we all know, by the way, the end note. Right? It's not a footnote, but the end of the story is they have Shlomo HaMelech eventually. Not at that time, but eventually they have Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech becomes the king of Israel. Meaning that marriage certainly is it's a legally sanctioned marriage. How can it be legally sanctioned? Answer number one in the Gemara. Answer number one of the Gemara. Each of these answers is fascinating and interesting. Answer number one of the Gemara, Onis. He was Ma'anis, or David was Ma'anis Bathsheba. Now what does that mean? This is such an interesting answer. It means now that because he was ma'anis her, so she doesn't become prohibited to her husband because she was an anusa, and because this is a logical conclusion, although I know it may not sit well intuitively, and because she's not usher to her husband, she therefore is not usher to her paramour, because it's not a paramour. It's a man who was ma'anizer. That's answer number one. Answer number two, V'i ba'isem ha'kihad amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmeni amar Rav Yonasan. The Gemara gives a second answer, which is kol yosel l'mechama be'beis David great krisis kosev li'ishtau. We know that as in general, when a man goes out to war, so he would write a get for his wife, and for a good reason, because he may not come back, and we may not know what happened to him. So that his wife doesn't become an aguna. So what you do is you write a get for his wife. And now there's an interesting machlokas, another give and take between Rashi and Tosfos over here. Do you write the get conditionally? Do you write the get unconditionally? Rashi says conditionally. Rabbeinu Tam at the end of the first Tosfos on the Amud says that no, you write the get unconditionally. Either way, you write a get. So because krisus kosev lishto dechsev, and how do we know this? The Gemara quotes a pasuk from Shmuel Aleph, Vezachicha tipake l'shalom ve'esayir v'osam tikach. I want you, this is instructions of Yishai to David. I want you to go out to your brother, see how they're doing, and I want you to go take a eravon. What does that mean? They're erav tam. So, my ve'etar arev v'osam tikach, teni rav yosef d'vermo m'ravim b'ino l'vena. The things that bind them, meaning, go and collect the get from your brother, so that in the event that they are... In the event that they don't come back for war, so then at least the wives now can move on with their lives. Okay.
Why didn't he say the proof was he didn't sin because he married her? He was allowed to marry her, so it was a proof that obviously. But when we say that whoever says that do it sin.
Call Omer David Choteinu Elotoa.
Right, so what we say, the proof that he didn't have a relation is because he married her.
You're absolutely right. What the Gemara wants to know is not that they did or they did not commit a nevera. The Gemara's assumption is he did not commit a nevera. The Gemara would like to explain to us how did he not commit a nevera? Okay, that's what the Gemara is addressing.
If he didn't do a nevera, why did Nathan confront him, and what did David say?
There are two distinct issues. The issue is propriety and impropriety. Okay. Right, and that's a discussion which what Phil pointed out. The Gemara Shabbos says if you say that David HaMelech sinned, Eino Ela Tov, you're mistaken. On the other hand, the pasuk says David makes the admission, Chatasi, I sinned. Okay, so that's a propriety and impropriety issue. We are having a strictly legal discussion of how is it not adultery? That our discussion is not propriety and impropriety, which is in of itself in its own interesting discussion. Our discussion is just simply facts on the ground. He knows that she committed adultery. How could he be with her? So answer number one, Onis. Answer number two, she was a divorced woman, either conditionally or unconditionally. But either way, she was a divorced woman. Amar Abai Afanam Tanin Abai says, look, we have a brisa supporting this as well. Basula says the Amar Revi, a Basula gets married on Wednesday. That's our Mishnah. What's the point from the Mishnah? Liyam Revi'in, Liyam Chabishilo. You get married on Wednesday, not on Thursday. Why not? My time, Mishumi Kure Daite. And the reason is because what's going to end up happening is if you get married on Thursday, the next time based in convenience is going to be Monday. By that point in time, you had a nice weekend. You calmed down. You had a drink. Maybe you had a second drink. And you calmed down, and that's it. You're calm. Velamai. Ila Mesav La Ksuva Sa Nesav La. The Gemara says, if we're talking about the Ksuva, fine. Give her the Ksuva. Ella La Osar Alav. Obviously, we're not talking, this is not a monetary issue. This is an issue of Isser. Udika Tantaina. And the problem is, not the problem, and the issue is that he's coming into Basin to make a claim. What claim is he making? Again, the Mishnah says none of this, but the Gemara is speculating. What claim is he making? My love, the Katayin Tanis Pesach Pasuach, isn't the Mishnah talking about a case where he comes into court the next day, and his claim is, I found no resistance. Lo, the Katayin Tanis Damim. So the Gemara says no. What his claim was is that here's a bedsheet, and there's no blood. I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Amar Pesach Pasuach. I'm sorry. Period. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the. Really, most of the majority of today's daf. We're going to pause over here. Let's just quickly summarize, and we'll pick it up tomorrow. Okay, so we finished. Baruch Hashem, we finished up yesterday's daf regarding all the brachas that the spokesman of Reish Lakish made at the wedding, and then we got on to the big sugya of today, which is that the husband comes into court the next day and he makes the claim of Pesach Pasuach. We start off with the halach of Rabbi Lazar, which is that he has nemanis, he has credibility. As we learned, it's not an objective credibility. We're not saying that she actually committed adultery. What we're saying is that from his standpoint, he wants to make her usher to him. He has every right to do so. Neman la osra alav. The Gemara asked the question, what about Sfeik Sfeika? In other words, even if he's right, how do we know that she committed adultery? In fact, chances are she didn't commit adultery. So the Gemara says either it's an Eishes Kohen or he was Mekadosher below the age of three. The Gemara then on the bottom of Tesamad Aleph goes on to discuss how does a woman become a usher to her husband? Either two witnesses saw the actual Bia, or there was one witness after Kino Estira, or he makes a claim of Pesach Pasuch. In any one of those cases, she becomes usher to him. What about David and Bathsheba? How come Bathsheba didn't become usher to David? So the Gemara gives two fascinating answers. Either number one, it was Ones, or number two, a get was written.
And what was the Chotosi then, if she had a get? It,
the way when it went about it, you know, legally fine, but ethically and morally questionable. And then finally, the Gemara tried to be medayik in our Mishnah that Rebbe Lazar is right. The Gemara says our Mishnah is not medayik that Rebbe Lazar is necessarily correct. And tomorrow we pick it up from the next statement of Rebbe Yehuda Mashmul.